a separate talk. So here we are on 2008, our lectures, and this is lecture 3. And the topic we'll be covering on lecture 3 here is list areas where this is being done. And what is it that's being done? What's being done is how stem cells are being utilized as a healing agency in the lives of people. Okay, now, list areas where this is being done. And then, how is... Oh, did you want to take a pause or get something? Okay. How acupuncture utilizes stem cells, how acupressure utilizes stem cells, and these actions physically realign the stem cells. Okay. Let's look at the first point here. Areas where stem cells are being utilized in the body. Now, we talked about a few of them. We talked about the liver. We talked about the heart. We talked about the lungs. We talked about the brain. We talked about tumors. We talked about all sorts of areas where stem cells are being utilized and how beneficial they are, and the eyes and things like that. Now, that's just the bare minimum. Just the bare minimum. Because there is nothing that is without being benefit from them. Now, I would like to conjecture this with you just as a topic for thinking. Is there a stem cell input that would be universal to the body? Is there a stem cell input into the body that would be for the eyes, the ears, the nose, the throat, the heart, the lungs, the whole work, that it would be a universal stem cell that would rejuvenate everything that it passed through or passed by?
Yes.
Do you think there is?
Yes.
And you want to tell me what you think it might be?
My thoughts.
Oh, yes, your thought, that's for sure. But I'm talking about a physical object. Now, our thought, yes, that comes in the third part here, the fourth part. But our thought, yes, but a physical stem cell. Now, how does a physical stem cell get in there and touch us? They can take a stem cell and put it in the brain, and it completely rejuvenates the brain. They can take a stem cell and put it into the muscle, like, sore, yeah.
Injected into the bone marrow.
Would you like to enunciate your words and I'll understand you clearly?
If it is injected into the bone marrow.
In the
form. If it is injected into the bone marrow.
Yeah. You said into the bone marrow.
Yeah.
And that's not where you get to the bone marrow. But that's okay. But injected into the bone marrow, yes. Yes,
and it becomes generic.
You say that's what your theory?
Generic.
It is a theory?
Generic, universal.
Oh, generic. Yes. And that is true.
Yeah.
That is true. Once you touch the bone marrow, once you touch the spinal cord, you have touched the entire body. No.
The nervous system.
From the bone marrow, from the spinal cord, move what? We're going to see them in the movie tonight. Bleep.
Goes through the cells in the body.
It reaches everything. Now, did you know, and I learned this the other day, that if you take a drink of water, a sip of water, one drop of water, that one drop of water is diluted throughout your entire bloodstream within 1 minute? Within 1 minute, whatever substance is taken into your body and is into your bloodstream, it's got to get in the bloodstream, of course, within 1 minute, it's through the entire body. So imagine that you're bitten by a rattlesnake or something. Yeah. So, you see, rattlesnakes are really not poisonous. You're so afraid of it that's what hurts you. The rattlesnake, its venom is through you by the time you're thinking about it. You got that venom through your whole system. A rattlesnake, I'm going to die, I'm going to do... And you see, you put the cause in motion, and then you put yourself in trouble. You put yourself in harm's way. You make the harm, which is a silly thing. Now, my little dog jumped into a rattlesnake, a little miniature schnauzer, And the rattlesnake says, "You're in my way, get out of here." Snap, and bit him on the nose. And he came out, and I said, "Rex, what did you do?" I heard the rattle, you know, so I knew what happened. And I looked at his nose, and I could see he had two blood spots there. And so I tried to find some place, it was Sunday, I tried to find some place that was open to take care of him. And I checked everywhere and everywhere, in forestry department and everybody, and finally I got a hold of the veterinarian that he had, and the vet says, "When did it happen?" I said, "Hours ago, you know. It happened before noon, and now it's like 3 o'clock. And he says, "I wouldn't worry about it. Tomorrow morning, bring him in, we'll give him a tetanus shot, and he'll be all right." So, but he'll swell. He didn't have to say that he'll swell. But I expected it as well, because he told me he'd swell. And so he swelled up. And I said to him, and I said to my son, "Okay, you swelled, now unswell." And so he unswelled. But we believe what the doctor tells us. We believe. And the doctor says, "He'll be all right, no problem." And so I believe that. And he was. So we put a big bandage on his nose, and and I took him to some meetings that I was going to, and they put him up in front in the meeting on the chair and said, "This is a dog that was bit by a rattlesnake, and he's whole and perfect, you know." And everybody got such a benefit from seeing it and realizing it, that the venom of the rattlesnake does not need to be so dangerous. It's only what we think it is. Yes. And of course, we have built it up in the movies, yes?
Yes, it seems something similar to this story. A U.S. Marine,
yes,
was stabbed with a 7-inch blade,
yes,
in Iraq recently. He was stabbed in the head, in the brain, with a 7-inch blade. A Marine was stabbed,
yeah, yeah,
in the head. He didn't die. Why? Because when he was asked...
Because he's a Marine.
No. Not because he's a Marine. No.
What's that?
No. He said he wasn't even aware. He thought something hit him on the head. His thoughts did not, his thoughts remained positive. He knew it was hard, but he never felt it. He refused to feel it. That's why he did not die.
But I'm sort of kidding you. A Marine isn't untouched by these things.
You know,
but the thing is, yes, he said that, and he put that cause in motion.
Yeah, exactly. That's and why he did not die.
Now, this is what I'd like all of us to learn this week. Is to put a cause in motion for ourselves that is so powerful that our life is revealed in its fullness. Now, is that a good idea? Now, how did this Marine accomplish that? He accomplished it with enthusiasm. No way! I mean, he just shouted it out probably, and he just he said it in such a way that, you know, tweak, I'm whole and perfect.
Exactly.
And can you say I'm whole and perfect, you know, and then beat him? But and see, this is the drama of this. This is the magic of this. This is the David Copperfield magician, the illusionist of this thing here. Because all life is just an illusion. One minute you have one illusion, another minute you have another. Lazarus was lying in the tomb, stinking away, and Jesus says, "Wake up, buddy, come on out." And he did. It's fresh as a daisy. Now, his sisters didn't want to believe it, but they saw it and believed it. Now, that's kind of dramatic, but people walking on fire is dramatic too. You're walking on cool, wet moss, it's dramatic. People walk on water. In the movie The Flying Nun, this little hat that she wears makes her float up in the air because she's so light. And it's a good story. But the thing is, what's she doing? Is that possible? Very much so. Would everybody be astounded if you did that? Especially you. But that's the wonderful thing. Now, your Marine was a beautiful example of definiteness. One Army person, he was in an airplane, and he was told to jump. And everybody jumped. Well, his parachute didn't open. Boom, clutch, and he hit the ground. And he hit the ground from way up there, and he was broken into a million pieces. And they looked at him and said, "Oh, no." And he says, "What do you mean, oh, no?" I mean, he was conscious. He was conscious. And he said, "What do you mean, oh, no?" "Oh, you be a fool." And so they carefully loaded him into the gurney, took him to the hospital. And He said, I want to be back on the track. I want to run. I'm a marathon runner. I want to run. I want to run. And they said, you'll never run again. But they put him back together again. And he crawled across the street and trained at night when no one could see him, you know, in the gymnasium across from his hospital ward. And within a year or two, he was out walking a little more, and he's running. And he won his marathons. That determination. But you see, he should not have lived. He was, you know, boom, you fall out the window here sometimes, you break your neck. But he went down that way, and they put them together. What tender, loving care the dent doctors must have had to put bone onto bone onto bone and knit the muscles together and knit the ligaments together and all of the nerves. How fantastic that must be. It's really amazing. But you see, what helped your Marine? His own thought. What helped this guy who fell out of the airplane? His own thought. I'm alive. I'm going to be living in my good body. I don't want to have a crippled body that I have to be in a wheelchair all the time. I'm alive. And that's what he said. And that's what he got. He chose to be there. He chose to be there. Now, we have that opportunity, and we use that opportunity. My goodness, we should talk about our subject here too. And I think we are, of course. These are areas where stem cells go to work. Now, we asked the question, let's finish talking about that. We asked the question, where might a stem cell be inserted into the human body where it might do a general purpose thing for the whole human body, the eyes, ears, nose, throat, and everything else, you know. And you suggest the spine into the bone marrow. Now, what is the purpose of the bone marrow? Now, if you haven't got a dictionary definition at hand, give me one from your mind.
The bone marrow supplies all the white blood cells. The red cells. The source of the manufacturer.
That's right. What's the brain connected? What's the spine connected to up here? The brain. And it starts, goes round. Yeah. It's wonderful.
The brain, he said, functions as a powerhouse. Distributes. It gets from the source for the marrow and distributes them to other parts of the body. That's what the spinal cord does.
Now, why wouldn't you just put it in the brain? Now, just give me an answer that it may be foolish, but give me an answer that probably be right.
The difficulty is that these stem cells might be tissue specific.
You're saying stem cells put into the brain
might be tissue specific.
Yes. And I agree with you.
That's right.
The
stem cells from the fast tissues are put in the brain.
The stem cells put into the brain would be retained by the brain for the brain.
Exactly.
Yeah. Rather than being given to the whole body.
Exactly.
And that's true. But when you put it in the spinal cord, in the material in the spine itself, the bone marrow, then it is universally distributed, probably faster than the blood could distribute it, because it is the source of all the activity within you and me and everything. That's why standing straight and walking proper and keeping your posture good and so forth, these are all valuable things for having your bone marrow, for having your bodily functions, for having the stem cells in your body now do their most efficient job. And yes, I agree with you. Bone marrow, it's not an answer that most people would give, because it presumes a bit of knowledge of the construction of the body. And the brain, too, is not the place, because the brain is a pig. The brain is very selfish. It wants to keep what it gets for itself. It wants... The brain has the majority of the blood of your body.
Two types of cells. I mean, the brain has two types of...
Oh yeah, it has two halves, yeah. Yeah, but it has all not all, but the major amount of blood in your body is in the brain, and the brain receives the servicing of the blood of your body more than any other area of your body. And man, oh man, you know, but think of it as a subject or as an object, it is very selfish. It wants it all for itself, to almost the exclusion of the body. Now, we have heard of people where you just have the head or just the brain in a glass jar, and it's maintained and kept alive somehow, as a science fiction sort of story. And the people are telling these things, well, you don't need the brain. What do you need?
My head.
You need your thought, that's all. Because your thought runs the show.
Yeah.
Your brain is merely a tool of your thought. But your brain has been trained to think that it is supremely important. Now, who can tell me what precedes, what is above and beyond the brain?
What?
What is above and beyond the brain? It's part of us, but it's above and beyond the brain.
The mind.
Right. So you see, not the brain, but the mind. And the brain is not the mind.
Yes.
The brain is a tool of the mind.
The mind, yes.
The brain is a tool of the body. The brain does whatever you bid it to do. The brain runs the show. It has the autonomic nervous system operating through the brain that operate everything in your body, telling it what to do. Because you couldn't begin to tell yourself what to do to make yourself operate right. You couldn't begin to tell yourself about the things you see with your eyes and how to look at them and how to change the texture of these things as the darkness and the lightness of the light go around. You couldn't begin to do it to tell the digestive system to go on and do its work. And it's so marvelous. It's so utterly fantastic. We are wonderfully made. And being wonderfully made, we are really quite fantastic beings. Now, this is something. Now, we learn little tricks, like we talked about, putting your thumb here in the crotch of your thumb and your forefinger, and you press that when you have a headache, gently, and you press it and you say, ah, and within seconds, your headache is gone. No matter what headache you have, migraine or anything else, within seconds, your headache is gone and doesn't come back. And when you shake hands with a person, you put your hand right down into their hand, right into that area, and you have control. You have control of the relationship you have with that person while you're shaking their hand. You can think any thought you want, and that person will be subject to whatever you think about, because you have the processing center, the control center, right there of your acupuncture point. It's utterly amazing. See how we shake hands? Now, put your hand in there. Shove it in. That's the way. Shove it in. And I cannot crush your hand, nor can she mine, because our hands are equally empowered. But now, if Sybil were to think, Herb, you are a billionaire, you're a billionaire, you're a billionaire. Herb, you are a billionaire and you are just donating lavishly, philanthropically on our organization here in Nigeria. You're a billionaire. You know, what would happen? I would have these thoughts going through my head and I would not realize where they were coming from. I wouldn't. She wouldn't have to say anything out loud. She wouldn't have to say anything good or bad, but she wouldn't have to say her desire. Or she could say, I'm sick in bed. I'm dying of blah, blah. And so what does she do? She comes to visit me. And she takes her hand and she puts it into mine firmly. And then she says, Herb, mentally, Herb, you are whole and perfect right now. Get out of bed and walk. She could say that. And that could be so. Now, do you think that Seville would believe that? Not at the moment, but she could. She could believe that, and what would happen if she believed it? It would be done. One of my students, I've told you about her, in Switzerland, she was a nurse, and she had a ward that she was a nurse over, and every night before she'd go home, She'd taken our courses and taken Avin through the doctorate and so forth, and she is recognized with these metaphysical degrees in her hospital. And every night before she'd go home, she'd walk up and down the ward and say, "You're holding prayer," to herself, to her people. And sometimes she'd even touch them. But she touched them often during the day. But she'd say, "You're holding perfect, you're holding perfect." Well, within a matter of months, her ward was empty and there was nobody to put in it. There was nobody to put in that ward. And nobody could figure out what happened. She really was a little unaware of what happened, but she really believed that. "You're holding perfect." Fantastic. This is so magical, the way this works. You have within you this power of creating your world in this perfect way if you wish. Now, I say to you, if you have this power, which you do, why not use it for yourself? Why not use it for yourself? Why not shake hands with your husband and say mentally, "I have the greatest husband in the world, the most remarkable..." You don't have to say it, you already got that, but you can say that, you know. "I have the most remarkable man in the world as my husband." And every time you hug him, every time you put your arms around him, and it should be often, every time you put your arms around him, you say to yourself, "I love you. You are the greatest thing that ever happened to me. You are the most wonderful treasure that I could ever want in my life. I'm so happy with you. I don't own you. But boy, do I love you. Do I enjoy your company. Do I enjoy your thinking with me and working with me." Now, what would happen to a relationship like that? It exists already.
Yes.
It's beautiful. But you see, you have that ability yourself with anybody in your world, any man, woman, or child. You can say that to them under your breath, not out loud, and you can just, they feel it. When you hug somebody and you say, "Oh, you're so wonderful," you know, they just giggle and bubble with you. They think that's so wonderful. Some of you do that with your children. Some of you do that with some of your children and not all your children. You see, you're all so proud, like, okay, he's so proud of all of his children. Well, I don't think that that's so wonderful. It's okay. But does he give each child exactly 100% equal amount of love that he gives to the other one? Or does he have some favorites? Does he have some that he feels are a little more precious than another? Now, this is human. This is normal. This is tough. If he is going to say that "I am God" of himself, then he must say, "I am unconditionally loving with each one of my children and each one of my wives," as he would say. You see? Now, does he have that ability? And you see, he doesn't have that ability because he treats each one with another word. And what word is that? With judgment. He looks at each one and judges them more valuable than the other, judges one child more wonderful than another, and you can't do that. If you're going to be a parent, I'm going to say something else that's terrible in a minute too. If you're going to be a parent, you have a 100% responsibility to let your children and your family know that you unconditionally love them. You have a responsibility, on pain of death if you don't do it, to say to each one of the members of your family, out loud and quietly, that you love them unconditionally. Now, the thing that you might not like, if any person runs for elective office, they must unconditionally love everyone in their jurisdiction. They must unconditionally love each one. They shouldn't love you more than they, or they more than you. They should love each one equally. If they don't love each one equally, then what happens? That's favoritism. And they cannot have favoritism. Because when they have favoritism, then some are not benefited. They are not a person for the people. But this is what you can do. You can mentally think about your legislators and think of the fact that they are people's legislators. They're for the people. They're for the country. They're interested in having the country be the garden spot of the world. Now, what have you got here, as we said before, that China doesn't have necessarily? China has all these geniuses, all these kids that are now being utilized and now being blessed and blossoming, blowing off the lid. What does Nigeria have that the rest of the world doesn't have?
Liquid gold.
What's that?
Oil. Liquid gold, oil.
The world says that what the rest of the world doesn't have is you. Each of you. Each of you is so precious. Each of you are so precious. You are so wonderful. You are so magnificent. You are geniuses. You are glorious. You're gods. And each of you will speak your word saying, Nigeria is the garden spot of the world, if that is your choice. I feed you this enough and you'll make it your choice. But it's your decision what you want to do. Now, would you like to have Nigeria? How many of you want to leave Nigeria? None. How many of you want to continue here and live in Nigeria the way it is today? Not really. How many of you want to live in Nigeria like Nigeria can be? Yes. You want to live in Nigeria like Nigeria can be. Now, how can Nigeria be like Nigeria can be? By your thoughts. By your thoughts. Now, you start putting these thoughts in motion for Nigeria, and Nigeria can be the most magnificent nation in the entire world. Because the legislators you have are okay, but now you have to start respecting them. And when you respect yourself, then you respect your legislators. And when you respect yourself and respect your legislators, then your legislators will be legislators for the people. And then you'll begin to enjoy all of the benefits of living in this marvelous world. How old is China? Buku years, you know. How old is Nigeria? Pretty old, too. They say that first life formed in Africa, remember? The first humans, the first Homo sapiens and so forth came out of Africa. Okay. what about China? What happened about them? Well, they just had a very intellectual world in their emperors and in their dynasties that they had. And that's what made them famous. But that also held them in bondage, because the people were considered to be nothing but slaves, nothing but chattels. And so China was nothing over the years. It was operated by warlords, as Japan was too, and Thailand and all these other countries there in the Far East. But they were operated by warlords. And as long as they were operated by warlords, they benefited only the warlords. The people were just working for the warlords. Even the Tibetan monasteries were working for the warlords. I mean, they understood where their bread was buttered to allow them to continue being. So now that's being changed. What happened recently that was one of the indications of that change? The Dalai Lama from the monastery itself, you cannot chain me. Adios. I'm not possessed by my home. I'm not possessed by this lamasery, this where we had lived all these thousands of years. We have it here and here, and we're taking it out into the world. And everywhere they go, what happens? I mean, they're such a terrible organization. They're so awfully, awfully, awfully bad. And if they really were awfully bad, people wouldn't do what they've done. People opened up their hearts to the lamasery people, to the Dalai Lama, to his group, as though they were their long-lost kin. And wherever the Dalai Lama went, every great cultural leader, every president, every pope, and every great person of every possibility embraced them. And what did the Dalai Lama give to them to them and to all the world. What was the one thing that he gave to all the world? We spoke of it the other day. What was it?
Smile.
He gave his smile. He gave his smile, which showed his unconditional love. He gave his smile. On his face is engraved this lovely smile. He's not a handsome man, but he's a very fine man. And he is a very dedicated man. And he is all pure love. And he goes around expressing that and living it. Now, you can do that too. You can do that too. You could be the Dalai Lama. You know how they start and they find the Dalai Lamas. They're just some kid. And they train him to do that, and he does it just fine. But he's a master. How do they find the Pope? They find a Pope who go around with his hands up instead of down as he blesses the people. Yeah. No. The world is just waiting for Nigeria to pop its lid. Just waiting for Nigeria to take a bulldozer and clear up the land and level it out and get rid of the swamps and marshes and where you want them. Where you want to keep them, you keep them. But to make land that is free of the malaria, mosquitoes, and free of other things that are harmful to beneficial visitors who are going to come and throng your shores and pour more money into your shores. The National Geographic had an article about some small island nation that had virtually nothing. I think it's over in the Mediterranean and near Crete or something like that. And this island nation made $2 billion a year from their tourist trade. And they only had one pier and one airport. You know? $2 billion a year from tourist trade. Now that's pretty good. You know, they can really help themselves a lot, and they did. They did. Now, think of what Nigeria could do, being the garden spot of the world. Do you know that there are virtually no bugs in California? There are no mosquitoes. There are no creatures that are deleterious to the health, because they spray the ponds and so forth where the mosquitoes would be born, you know, and they spray all these areas. And it's kind of a dry country anyhow, so they don't have to spray too much. But they spray, and so mosquitoes are at a minimum, if at all. Really, it's amazing. And so, you see, all of these factors could be used here in Nigeria to benefit the country and make it into this paradise that it is already. At least it is in my sight. Okay, boo-dee-boo. Acupuncture, acupressure. They utilize the stem cells. Why do they utilize the stem cell? What do you do when you use acupuncture? You take some needle and you push it into the skin at different places. Just push it through the surface of the skin. And then the needle stands there and does something. And what happens? That needle goes through and touches one of your stem cells there at that location. These are called meridians of the body, and the meridians of the body feed all other avenues of the body. And when the acupuncture is used, moxibustion, where you have this little heated jar you put over the different things, and it causes the skin to enlarge and so forth. But they're fantastic things. It's a beautiful study. The Yellow Emperor, 5000 BC, wrote a book about this. And his book is still used today by acupuncturists because the meridians were so perfectly aligned. Whatever people wrote that book, how did they know it? Tell me quickly. They listened within. They listened within. They didn't practice. They didn't say, let's see, here, 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 here. You know, they listened within. This is what a genius does. He listens within. This is what your God self is doing from within, telling you the answer to everything on the outer. So when you listen within, then that voice, that magic comes through. And when that magic comes through, what happens to you? If you listen and follow it, great things happen. If Einstein hadn't listened to the theory of relativity, what was the phrase? E equals mc squared? What does it mean? Who knows? He does. But it meant the theory of relativity. And all scientific discovery after his theory of relativity was based upon that information, upon that theory. It's what he thought. Now, what made him think that? What made him have the right to think that his thought was right? Well, nobody could contest him. Nobody could put him down. Now you, when you have your dreams, when you want to do your acupressure, acupuncture, when you want to reach the meridians and touch the stem cells that are lying beneath these meridians at these locations, magic happens. Magic happens. One of our student people who were on the lecture platform with me at UCLA, she was about 80 years old, and she was traveling around the world lecturing and doing good things. Thelma Alga Worrell, and marvelous lady. But she said to Dr. McGarry, who was an acupuncturist and a medical doctor, she said, "Oh, I feel so exhausted." And he said, "May I give you a treatment?" She said, "Sure." She was ready. So he always carried his little bag of acupuncture needles with him. And he opened it up there at the meal table and took out one or two. And he put one on the shoulder here and one on her neck. And then she said, "Can I turn my head while it's there?" I said, "Sure you can." And he said, "Yeah, sure, you can, that's true." But, you know, I'm not an acupuncturist. But then we were talking, and she got livelier and livelier and livelier, and pretty soon it was time for her to go on the platform and speak, and she was a dynamo, because he had touched her energy circuits, and she had just blossomed, and all of her feeling of lack of energy was gone. Now, I want to say two things by saying this. One, acupressure and acupuncture can do these things. They can touch those stem cell centers where you can work on your energy centers and things like that. Also, what it is just manipulation. A little manipulation of the body or mind. And her lack of energy was now full-blown energy. A little manipulation, and where she wasn't beat because her muscles were beat and her body was beat and her attitude was beat. "I've been traveling all day and all night, and I've been doing this and I've been doing that. I fly all over the world, and I came here. I came here on an overnight flight, and first I flew from Los Angeles to Zurich, and that was a long flight. You try to sleep, you know. And I didn't care. So when I got there, then I had maybe about 12 people to counsel with, and I counseled with them. And then after we'd finished that, then it was time to go to bed and get up in the morning and fly here. And so then here, it was an overnight flight coming down from London, fly from Zurich to London, and then London to here, and then to Abuja, and then down to Port Horican, and then here, Horican, and no sleep there. But you see, did I lack energy?
No.
Did I need any more sleep? I take my nap. I lay down for about 20 minutes, and I'm all set to go again and happy. And I'm 25.
Yeah.
And thank you. And it's wonderful. And I feel great. But I tell myself I feel great. I live in this greatness. People say, "Where do you get your energy?" I get my energy from the same place you get yours. From my thought. Not from my body, My body does what I ask it to do. If I eat something, which I almost did this noon, ate more than I should have. If I eat more than I should, I feel a little bit bloated. And I have to say to myself, it goes in, it goes out. You know, I'm totally relaxed. But rather than doing that, I follow my judgment. And then I say to myself, I am energy. I am full of energy. I am fantastic. I am happy. And so be it. And I take my vitamins and other good stuff that everybody recommends to me. And I think to myself, you know, if I left that all home, I'd probably feel better. But I make them feel good by my taking it along, so I take it along. But big deal, you know? Vitamins, minerals, other good things like that. Yes, we all have that opportunity to put our cause in motion for it. Now, here we have the acupressure, acupuncture. Utilizes the stem cells because it knows not necessarily where they are. It knows where their focal point is. And when you know where the focal point is, then you know how to get the benefit out of them. Now, your car will drive. Your car will take you anywhere. Your car will do anything you want it to do. But if you take your foot and put it down on the floor and keep pressing it on the floor and say, why doesn't it go? And then your mind says, because you haven't put it on the gas pedal. And say, oh, a car is a car is a car. I can put my foot any place I want and it should go. Well, that's not the way you built that car. If you build that car with the floor pedal, the floorboard as the gas pedal, then yes, that's true. But you have to do a little engineering to come with those things mentally or physically. Now, what do you do? What do you do? You say that this is the energy centers. That's what the Yellow Emperor said, the Yellow Emperor of China had said. That's the Golden Emperor. That's what, from the Yellow Empire. That's what he had said. That's what he wrote. When I was given his book to review and write a review for the magazine, I read the book. And I became interested in acupuncture. And it was very wonderful, very exciting adventure, but just an adventure. The story of Nigeria bursting its top is not a story. It is not an adventure. It is what?
Reality.
It is done. It is a reality. It is already complete. Have I said this before to you?
Yes.
Will I say this again and again and again? What do I see when I come into this beautiful countryside?
Transformed Nigeria.
I don't see a transformed Nigeria. I see a beautiful Nigeria. I don't know what you're transforming it from. You know? If I'm going to have what you're transforming it from, then I'm living on two worlds, you know. And I don't want to live on two worlds. I want to live in the world that I live in, where I live in a glorious Nigeria. And when I visit China, I visit a glorious China. When I visit Taiwan, I visit a glorious Taiwan. When I visit Japan, I visit and Manila and New Zealand and Australia, blah, 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 blah. All this name dropping up, country dropping. When I visit these beautiful places, wow! And all these people say, what you teach is just fundamental. And that's where we all have to begin. And I say, well, that's all I know, is just the fundamentals. You know, I'm a pilot. My son builds and designs ultralight airplanes and sells them all over the world. And he's been doing that since he was 16. Very talented boy. And I fly light planes. And light planes are lots of fun to fly. And you get in the light plane, and you're flying along, and all of a sudden you run out of gas. You shouldn't do that, because you should check your tank to make sure it's full. But you run out of gas, and so you have to land. And so you see a field, and you start going down toward the field, and you decide to land on it. And then, for some reason, you say, oh, am I doing the right thing? And you take your hands off the controls, your feet off the rudder and stabilizer and so on. And the plane perfectly lands itself because that's what it's designed to do. Children's planes that they throw in the air are designed to land as well as fly. They're designed to just sort of glide in beautifully. Hopefully there's no trees in the way that they crash into, but yeah, they're supposed to just glide in beautifully. And this is what the light planes do. They just glide and land beautifully. They are so fantastic. Now, this is the way your body is designed. This is the way your mind is designed. To just glide in on autopilot and handle itself. You are not to be worried about what you put in your body, only, and not be worried about it, but only be aware of what you speak and say. Jesus had that statement for us, but don't be worried about what goes into the body, but what comes out of the mouth. So, what comes out of the mouth? I should even use your things here. Is he on here too? Is he Paul, Peter, and Ethel? You were here visiting last time, weren't you, Ethel? That's the other guy?
Ethelbach.
Ethelbach. Oh, it looked like a best. Ethelbest, B-U-T, right?
Ethelbach.
B-E-R-T.
Okay. Or Albert. Where's Albert?
That's him.
That's him. And Sam. And Michael.
Yes.
And Grace. And Lucky. Hi, Lucky.
Well, Lucky just went out.
Yeah, Lucky went out. Okay, Lucky went out. And then Ibane. Ibane.
Abina.
Okay. Abina. Yes. Uh-huh. And Cranus.
Cranus.
Oh, that's the one we played with there. Cranus. C-Y-R-I-N-U-S. Cranus. Okay. And this is the master's name, you know.
Emmanuel.
Did you take it after him? Or did he take it after you? Okay. And this is Lordy. Mr. Johnson. Lord Johnson. And Sybil. And that's Lucky, huh? Beautiful. Okay, now, what was I going to say?
I'm not yet blinded. I'm not yet blinded.
Paul. Yeah, I said you first. And I said you before everybody started listening. You were at the beginning. Paul. Paul and Peter. Peter and Paul. Hey, you make a good team. Peter, Paul, and Mary, huh? Great. Okay. Now, that's good. How are we doing at time?
4 o'clock.
What?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Okay, we got 6-7 minutes there. All right. These actions physically realign the stem cells. Now, I was saying to you that it's not what goes into the body, but what comes out of the mouth that makes the difference. And that's the point that we want to emphasize for ourselves. What are we speaking? What are we saying? What is it that's coming out of our mouth? You don't dare judge. And you judge when you say, when I say David Copperfield is a magician, and you say, oh, he's sleight of hand. He's a, no, no, no. All right. One of my students, Katie Fink, she is a photographer and she's now 93 or so, and she's in Germany. She runs this photography studio and has big operations over there, she and her husband. They're just doing great. And Katie is an individual person. She likes to do things. And so the fellows came to town teaching walking on fire. And so she took their walking on fire program. And she did it. And it was just a one-day affair, or not even a full day. And at the end of the day, she walked on fire. She walked on cool, wet moss. And she was not burned.
She walked on fire.
I'm sorry?
She walked on fire.
She walked on fire that she called cool, wet moss. She called it cool, wet moss.
Cool, wet moss.
mentally she had in her mind that it was cool boss, but actually it was fire. I mean, that's the way they teach you, and that's the way it works. So then what does Katie do? The guy came to town again the next time, went to her and wanted her to publicize him with some of her photography and pictures, and they said, now you come, you can walk on fire again, no charge this time, you know. So she did it, and she walked on fire again. She walked on cool, wet moss in her mind, up, and then all the way back. The pit was maybe 18, 20 feet long, and it was filled with charcoal briquettes, you know. They were all red hot, really, really, really glowing and hot, and that's hot stuff. And now, they had clothing on, and their skirts or pants were rolled up. Now, theoretically, the pants should have been hot. The skirt should have been burned because the heat was so intense. And to walk that distance, it takes a moment or two. And that heat is heating up the skirt and heating up the pant legs and so on. But they were not hot and they did not burn. Now, why were they not hot and why did they not burn? Why did she and all the other people walk over the cool, wet, over the the hot fire coals and not be burned? Because they thought it was something else, the mind. Now, the mind even controlled the fact of that their clothing was not damaged. Isn't that something? Your mind has a power that you haven't even begun to appreciate yet. None of us have. The day that we do, we will do it. The devil said to Jesus, hey, I'll give you the power to jump off of this high place where we are and you won't be injured. I'll give you the power of control of the people of the world. I'll give you the power of everything. And Jesus says, no, thank you. And the devil said, follow me. And Jesus said, no, thank you. So you see, you have that power and you don't have to follow the devil to do it. You don't have to take marijuana. You don't have to have gypsum weeds. See, we don't grow it. It grows on our ranch, gypsum weed. And it's a fluted flower, quite beautiful. And if a cow ever eats it, which is they don't do, it'll feel like jumping over the moon. And if a farmer is pulling out the gypsum weed and his hands slip on it as he's pulling it and it breaks the surface of the plant, he then himself is like given a shot of marijuana and he feels like he's going to fly over the moon. And they try to jump off the mountains and other things. But they're hallucinogenic. Now, why is it that there, with the hallucinogenic, they cannot do it, whereas the people who are walking on fire, calling it cool, wet moss, are able to walk on fire or cool, wet moss? Why could they do that? Any answer?
Because they never walk on fire.
They walk on cool, wet moss.
Yes.
But it actually is fire.
Exactly.
All right? What was the other part of the illustration I gave you?
That's our mind controls.
Why is it some people use their mind and some people don't? Why is it some of these kids who don't deserve it are geniuses and some of these brilliant, not brilliant, but wonderful people are not geniuses? Interesting. Why is it autistic people can come up with some marvels, some magic? You say to an autistic person, if he is into this particular area, you say to him, what's 2 times 4 times 5 minus 6 divided, and give a string of numbers that's enough to boggle your computer. And he's got the answer the instant you give the last figure. How can he do that?
Because at one point,
The mind knows all.
One-pointed.
Yeah, one-pointed. He stayed with it step by step. Now, how does your computer, or your the computer, how does it give you the figure when it's done? You put in all the numbers, and then you press equals. And what comes up? The answer. Now, how does it know how to do that? You told it how to do that.
Yes.
You, man, taught that computer how to do that. We teach the computer, we teach the cellular telephones how to do it. We teach the television pictures how to go through the air. We teach all that stuff how to happen. And then we say we don't know things. We know things, my goodness. We just don't trust ourselves. And you say to a little child, what do you think of this? Oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that. Well, that's kind of complex. I'm sorry. If you ever have trouble with your computer, call in your kid and ask him to fix it. Yeah. And they haven't taken the course. They don't know how to do it. They just go in there and they press buttons and they say, this does that, that does that, this does that. Well, okay, click, 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 click. And they do it. And the kids don't have to do what you have to do. You know what you have to do? You have to shut the computer off and then turn it on again. They don't even have to do that. Now, why is it the kids don't have to turn it off and turn it on again, but you do? How come? Because the kids don't think they have to.
Yeah, it's neutral.
That's not in their consciousness. They don't believe that they have to shut these things off and turn them on again. They don't think that that's part of the role that they have to play. Interesting, isn't it? We think it's part of the role that we have to play, so then we're limited by it, and then we have to do that. Now, when are we going to quit that? When are we going to say, I know that I know that I know, and we know? Right now. Right now. Again, we go back to the Bible stories. I only go back to it because I know some of you have a little history in that area. Jesus said, what? Ask? Knock, and it'll be opened unto you. And he had a third one. What's the third one?
Seek,
and ye shall find. Now, isn't that interesting? See how much of a minister you are and you don't even know it? But these are beautiful things, and they're beautiful for us to apply in our world and to get the magic of them being done. But as I was saying, and didn't finish the statement, we listen to David Copperfield and we want to belittle him. We want to say, he's got a trick in there someplace. Well, sure, he's got a trick in there someplace. He believes in himself. He's got his technique of doing it. The technique works for him. He believes in it. And you know, I got a technique too. I am a magic man. I can take 20,000 pounds and move it with just the touch of my finger. 20,000 pounds. I get into this gigantic Mack truck and I turn the key and 20,000 pounds goes moving along. Well, that's a truck. You got this instrument. So? David Copperfield's got his technique too. What's his technique? He made this beautiful 1948 Lincoln car appear on stage while we were all sitting there watching. He had this sheet over this, whatever it was, and then he had people around to make sure that nothing was coming on, going off. And then he pulled the sheet off, this plastic sheet, and there was that gorgeous car. And he gets up there into the car and starts the engine and climbs out. How did it get there? And then when he was done, he covered it again and pulled the sheet off and it was gone. Now, true, he probably slid it away someplace or did something, or he had his staff do something. Well, whatever he did, he's quite good, I would say. Quite good. He is a master of the illusion, and you and I can be master of the illusion, because that's what life is all about. It's done unto us according to our belief, and that's wonderful. Well, very good. Then we have about 25 minutes, and then we will have a few visits upstairs. Okay?
Yes.
And they all know.
No.
You told them.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Good. That'll be today's visitors.
Yes.
Great.
Four.
Yes. Right. Okay. Super. Any other question before we?
There's a question.
Yes, sir.
Can you give us some of the, you know, secrets or techniques that we know that we have known that we have this stupendous power in our minds, in our awareness.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that the problem is staying single-minded about what we want to manifest without looking at the other thing.
About what you know already exists.
Exists.
Mm-hmm.
I want to manifest.
and we want to reveal it.
We want to reveal
it. You see, if you manifest it, you are bringing it forth out of something where it's not. If you reveal it, you're revealing something that already exists. That's just terminology, you know. But your idea is okay. Fire away.
So what I'm asking is, now that you already know that what all that you are creating is an illusion, and that when you deviate to look at the other one you don't want to manifest, it will begin to manifest and interfere with what you want to manifest. How can you remain single-minded in getting at what you desire to
manifest?
Well,
you just said you were unsingle-minded. You just said you were diverted in your attention by something, right? In your own imagination, you were diverted from what you were thinking about, right? Is that what you said?
Yes, because in the world of illusion, that which we are,
there are
what we call temptation. It's the presentation of pictures in the course of your, even if you're a hero, in the course of your heroic activity, there will be pictures of what we call temptation presented to you that are dual in nature. How do you continue to, you know, remain focused?
Well, that is the big problem that any philosophy has. How do you remain one-pointed with whatever it is you're teaching, learning, or sharing, or living? How do you remain one-pointed on that? You say the same thing to your child. How do you remain one-pointed? You say to the child, supper's ready, and then the child sits outside and plays because he knows you don't mean it yet. And then you go, supper's ready, and he still knows you don't mean it. And then you say, get in here and get washed up, and he knows you're a little more serious, but you still don't mean it. And then you say, get in here or there's no supper for you, and then you dash in the house because you have reached the limit. Now you see, this is what we do with our illusions, and we carry them to the limit because we really don't believe it. We really don't believe our mother wanted us to come on the first calling, or the second or third, but on the fourth calling we got the message. Now, we don't get the message as we are working on our spiritual self, as we are seeking to find the answer to who we are, seeking to find, just for instance, you're sick, or let's say you cut yourself, and you're bleeding, and you have nothing to stop the bleeding, and you know that that's not a good thing, because you lose too much blood, and you'd be weak, and can't go anyplace. So, you are one-pointed. You say, hey, stop bleeding. With all of your one-pointed attention, stop bleeding. You know, like you're a Marine. Stop bleeding. I will not tolerate your bleeding. Your whole imperial. You're fantastic. Do you think that would heal? Do you think that would mend? And then, do you think you'd go around telling everybody you did that? No. No. That is your blessing, an unbelievable blessing. It's unbelievable about that Marine. What he did is unbelievable, but others saw it. That's why it was able to carry forth and be told. But if you spoke to yourself, heal, you're whole and perfect, you're wonderful, you're fantastic, you're, and the blood would stop coming out, the arteries would cauterize, and the healing would be perfect, and by the time you looked at it again, there'd be no indication where you'd hurt yourself. No indication. But, you know, that's one-pointedness, though. Part of the ability to maintain one-pointedness is the intensity and sincerity of yourself. Now, you don't always have to shout. You don't always have to, but you have to give it the total internal fortitude attitude, which keeps you one-pointed on what you're talking about. Now, little children are very good at this. They get things that they want. They know exactly how. Yes. And you say, well, they're manipulating. But no, they're one-pointed. They're one-pointed. They know that they're going to have that pony. They know that they're going to have whatever they want. And they get it. And it's so beautiful.
They're non-stop.
They're non-stop. And this is you. This is us. When we are so one-pointed with what we believe for ourselves, what we believe for ourselves takes place. And it takes place on a permanent basis. Now, do you think that Katie Fink could walk on fire anytime she wanted to, as long as she thought it was cool at most, Moss? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does she do it? No. She doesn't have a lot of fire to practice on. But does she do it? Does Katie think going to her backyard where she's having a barbecue, you know, and the fire is all there, and she says, I think I'll walk over that cool wet moss. She says to her husband, you know, and her husband says, oh, skeptical, you know, don't tell anybody, just go do it, shut up. You've got to keep your mind one-pointed. You cannot allow your husband's incredulity to enter into it, his doubt in your ability to do that. You can't allow him to do that. You've got to go walking and do your thing yourself and shut up. Walk your spiritual path and shut up. Enjoy the benefits and the blessings of walking your path by not telling anybody. You will be known by the world by who you are, and as you walk your path and as you stay true to who you are, doors will open for you for anything that you might choose. It's a magic and wonderful world. Katie Fink could walk across that fire if she kept it in her mind that she's walking across cool wet moss and she's not doing it for anybody's demonstration. Now, she could do it for somebody's demonstration if she wanted to. But if she did it for somebody's demonstration, she would have to say to them, now what I'm going to do might seem strange to you, but I mentally am walking over cool wet moss. And that's exactly what these here. But mommy, that's up. Oh, you blew it. Now I can't do it. Because you're planting in my consciousness that it's a hot fire. I finally got myself to believe it's cool wet moss. And then you come out there, and one little step, you say, that's hot, mommy, don't do that, you know. And that's emotion. That's tough. Yes. Life is wonderful. There was a great scientist who is well known in circles of plants and biology and so forth. And he was sitting on the back porch with some friends talking. And the back porch was level with the field in the backyard. And the field in the backyard had just tons and tons of beautiful flowers growing right at the level of the porch. You look out, it's like the porch was continuing in the level of the flowers. Well, his daughter came running out of the house. She says, Daddy, isn't this wonderful? And then she ran off the back porch onto the flowers and walked on the flowers and played out there. And he was, what's going on? How super, oh my God, you know, wow. And, but he didn't say a thing. He knew enough not to say a thing. And the little girl came back in and he says, that was nice, wasn't it? He saw it. He would never have believed it. But you see, when he saw it, he realized if he had spoken, he might have broken her concentration on the fact that she was walking on a solid surface. If you read Donald, what's his name? What?
Masters of the Far East, Volume 5.
No. Flyer. Richard Bach, his book
Illusions,
yeah. Handbook of an Ascended Master. It's in his book Illusions. In there, he has a similar incident like that, and it's really quite interesting because in there, he is talking to Donald, and Donald Simoda, rather. He's the reluctant Messiah. And Richard Bach is the pilot, and he's the one who's writing about this thing here. And they're sitting on the edge of a lake. And Richard says to Donald, well, sure looks like an inviting lake to take a swim in, you know. And Donald said, oh, really? And he said, well, I think not. And Richard said, what do you mean? He said, watch. And so Donald dove into the land and swam around and climbed out on the lake. And so Richard says, how did you do that? And Donald said, I don't doubt, I did it. And so Richard dove into the land and he was filled with mud, mud all over him. He was muddy everywhere because he didn't fully realize what he was doing. And then he climbed out on the lake and Donald said, would you like to rinse off? And he says, yes. And then the lake was not solid anymore. He fell right in the lake. But you see, these are things you could do. And like Donald Simoto said to Richard, as he walked through a wall, he says, you don't walk through a wall. He said, you merge one as the wall. You are one as the elements of the wall. And you are not walking through anything. You are merging one as it. And if you haven't read Richard Bach's Illusions, it's just a thin little book, well done. His first book is on Jonathan Livingston Seagull, which is equally thin but equally wonderful. They're books we use in our courses here. Just very exciting.
Seagull.
Huh? You said what?
Jonathan Seagull. What did you mean? Jonathan Seagull. Okay, okay.
Did you get your answer?
No, Jonathan Seagull. I wanted to know what you mentioned.
Oh, you know, Jonathan, yeah. You're thinking in German? Because I have my students in German and Russian I got books published in Russian. Did you know that? I can't read them, but I have books in Russian and Italian and German and French. And our book in France, our French, sells better in Canada than it does in France. Wonderful. Okay, kids, we'll take our pause, and I'll take my pause, and then I'll see you in 15 minutes, one by one, four of you. Okay, I love you.